from the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty. Liberty, Texas, that is. It's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You're yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, and one heck of a nice guy. Ask anybody, they'll tell you. What do you say we get things officially started with?
The Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. Nice one here. It says, it's better to light a candle than curse the darkness. That is an old saying and a good one. It is better to light a candle than curse the darkness. Unless, of course, the candle goes out, then you can curse the candle and the darkness.
So weird.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of the big blogcast.
Twisted history.
Here we go.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happened on this day throughout history.
To be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same, you need to know your twisted history.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Uh-huh. We say that every day, even though it has yet to happen, right? I don't recall any quizzes. Do you? All right. Well, here we go, kids. It was on this day in 1783, George Washington issued a general order announcing the end of hostilities with Britain and giving thanks to the Almighty, offering congratulations and authorizing an additional ration of alcohol to the troops to celebrate. Now, there's a leader I could get behind. Yeah. And it was on this day in 1874, African explorer David Livingstone was buried in Westminster Abbey. Now, they buried him there because he had passed away. That's just a little fact that I didn't want to omit.
You need serious, serious help.
There was an interesting media survey done the other day, and basically the question was, how much attention are you paying to Trump's legal cases? And it's pretty interesting. Only 26% said a lot, and some only a little to none. That category, that was all lumped into one category, 73%. And it's kind of stunning, though, because what's happening to Donald Trump is evidence of the corruption that is so rampant in our current government. And yeah, it's partly deep state. And it's mostly Democrat-operated. Now, in a recent development that is sparking a lot of outrage among the conservative community, a motion's been filed by the George Soros-funded prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, which basically they're synonymous. If it's Alvin Bragg, he's representing George Soros. And what they're trying to do is hold individuals accountable for their actions. And this move has only added fuel to the fire of the already heated debate surrounding the influence of George Soros on our entire justice system. The man has far more influence and pull than any individual ever should have. I would argue that perhaps George Soros is even more powerful than our Supreme Court. And nothing is done, nothing is done to try to put this man in check. Frankly, Soros should be deported. If they can't jail him, deport him. But anyhow, this guy Alvin Bragg has been known for his progressive stance and ties to Soros has once again made headlines with this bold move. And many on the right see this as yet another example of Soros' deep pockets manipulating the legal system to serve his own agenda. And he's doing this so very well. So here's Fox News' Jesse Waters.
A Democrat prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, keeping the Republican nominee off the campaign trail for 6 weeks. That means Donald Trump isn't even allowed to attend his son Barron's high school graduation. If he tries to go, the judge will throw him in jail for that, too.
As you know, my son has graduated from high school, and it looks like the judge will not let me go through the graduation of my son, who's worked very, very hard. He's a great student. Very proud of the fact that he did so well, and I was looking forward for years to have graduation with his mother and father there. And it looks like the judge isn't going to allow me to escape this scam. It's a scam trial. And I can't go to my son's graduation, or that I can't go to the United States Supreme Court, that I'm not in Georgia or Florida or North Carolina campaigning like I should be. It's perfect for the radical left Democrats. That's exactly what they want. This is about election interference. That's all it's about.
Piers Morgan actually had a good idea for once and said Trump should go to Barron's graduation anyway and make the judge arrest him while everyone's throwing their caps in the air. Who is this judge anyway? He's a Biden donor. And the Biden-Harris campaign and Adam Schiff paid his family members millions. Who's the prosecutor? Alvin Bragg, a lazy, Soros-funded DA who fights Trump instead of crime. Half the felony charges that come across his desk, he downgrades to misdemeanors, but not this one. He takes a bookkeeping misdemeanor and Frankensteins it into 34 federal felonies, a form of legal acrobatics that's never been seen in the history of American law. Bragg is arguing that Donald Trump should have paid Stormy Daniels with campaign funds and filed it with the FEC. If Donald Trump had used campaign money to pay off Stormy Daniels, he would have been indicted years ago. You can't spend campaign funds on personal matters. The campaign finance laws say politicians cannot use campaign money on personal expenditures like plastic surgery or buying new suits or golf club memberships. Even though those things technically may help the campaign, they're personal. And what's more personal than spending money to protect your marriage? He used his own money, his own lawyer, to handle a personal matter. Bill Clinton paid off Paula Jones while he was president. He didn't use campaign cash. If donors were allowed to pay off politicians' personal expenses for things that happened years before they ran for office, you think the system's corrupt now? Just wait.
Now, having just heard that, what is exactly this motion that's caused this uproar? And according to sources, it calls for the prosecution of individuals involved in what's being deemed as unlawful activities. Covers a wide area, wouldn't you think? During recent protests and demonstrations. Now, this includes charges against law enforcement officers for their use of force in maintaining order and protecting innocent civilians. Remember, George Soros is behind this. George Soros is also the same person behind no bail and low bail judges. So for conservatives, this is seen as a direct attack on the men and women who risk their lives to keep our streets safe. And they argue that Bragg's agenda is to dismantle our law enforcement and leave us vulnerable to chaos and lawlessness. And all you have to do to see a prime example of that is visit cities like Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York City now, too. And furthermore, many are believing that Soros' funding of Bragg's campaign for prosecutors is a clear indication of his intentions to sway the entire legal system in his favor, his, George Soros' favor. And this isn't the first time that the Hungarian-American billionaire has been accused of using his wealth and influence to manipulate politics and justice. Do you know, I remember listening to Glenn Beck's radio program more than 20 years ago, and even back then, he was warning us. Glenn Beck was warning us about the dangers of George Soros. And now the man is right here in the open. He freely admits what he's doing. And the Democrat Party just falls in lockstep behind him. And the backlash against Bragg's motion's been pretty quick and fierce because conservatives are standing united in their opposition to what they see as a blatant disregard for law and order. Some have even called for a boycott of Soros-funded organizations and businesses, and why that hasn't been done up to this point is beyond me. But they're urging others to take a stand against this manipulation and the man himself, George Soros. But on the other hand, those in support of Bragg argue that the motion's necessary in holding individuals accountable for their actions and addressing the systemic issues within our justice system, which I think is purely BS. They point to the ongoing protests and calls for social justice as evidence that change is needed. And Bragg's motion's a step in the right direction. Again, it's bullcorn. Because for conservatives, the fear remains that this is just the beginning. With Bragg now in a powerful position, there are quite a few concerns that he's going to continue to push his progressive agenda, thereby dismantling the very foundations of our justice system. I mean, make no mistake about it. George Soros and everything that he stands for and everything that he's doing is just nothing but pure evil. It falls under that umbrella of evil. And in the end, this latest move by the Soros-funded prosecutor has only deepened the divide between the right and left, and it's going to get deeper. Could it lead to civil war? Yeah. I wouldn't rule it out. Conservatives see it as a dangerous abuse of power, while progressives see it as a necessary step toward reform. And the fact of the matter is, the left wouldn't know reform if it kicked them in the crotch. And quite frankly, only time's going to tell how this controversy will unfold and what impact it'll have on our justice system. But one thing's for sure, the battle between conservative values and the influence of outside forces is a long, long way from over. As I briefly mentioned in yesterday's podcast, there's a big Supreme Court showdown, and it's all about a fellow by the name of Joseph Fisher, who was there for the Capitol gathering back on January 6th of 2021. And now he's facing an obstruction charge because they say he messed with the certification of Biden's so-called win, they being the prosecution team. But here's the kicker. The outcome of this could set the stage for what occurs with Trump and his court cases. And it looks like over 300 cases might get dismissed. Now, according to Newsmax, they say conservative U.S. Supreme Court justices on Tuesday signaled skepticism toward an obstruction charge brought by the Justice Department against a Pennsylvania man in the 2021 Capitol attack, a case with possible implications for the prosecution of Donald Trump for trying to overturn his 2020 election loss. The justices heard arguments in Joseph Fisher's appeal of a lower court's ruling rejecting his attempt to escape a federal charge of corruptly obstructing an official proceeding. The congressional certification of President Joe Biden's victory over Trump that the rioters sought to prevent on January 6th of 21. Now, Trump, the Republican candidate challenging the Democratic president in the November 5th U.S. election, faces the same charge in a criminal case brought against him last year by special counsel Jack Smith. And as you know, things with Jack Smith aren't going very well these days. This case with Fisher may be a monkey wrench thrown into the entire prosecution process on the part of the left against Donald Trump. Now, the conservative justices, who form a 6-3 majority, expressed concerns about the decision by federal prosecutors to apply to Fisher's case an obstruction provision in the 2002 Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Now, that's a law passed after the accounting fraud scandal at now-defunct energy company Enron. Remember them? Now, they grilled U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preligar about the law's sweep, how it should be interpreted, and whether the charge was necessary given the range of other criminal counts brought against January 6th defendants. Conservative Justice Neil Gorsuch appeared wary that a broad reading of the law could encroach on nonviolent protests, emphasizing the maximum penalty of 20 years in prison under the obstruction charge. So Gorsuch asked Preligar, would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify? Would a heckler in today's Supreme Court audience qualify, or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify? I thought that was rather shrewd on his part. But conservative Chief Justice John Roberts, as conservative as he seems to be, seemed inclined to view the law narrowly, suggesting it might apply only to defendants who alter or destroy evidence. An interpretation that Fisher's asked the court to embrace, by the way. Now, Fisher's accused of charging at police guarding a Capitol entrance during the attack. And Fisher, at the time, a member of the North Cornwall Township Police in Pennsylvania, got inside and pressed up against an officer's riot shield as police attempted to clear rioters, according to prosecutors. Now, he remained in the Capitol for 4 minutes before police pushed him out. And Jeffrey Green, a lawyer for Fisher, said prosecutors had misapplied the Enron-driven evidence tampering statute to his client's case. Attempting to stop a vote count or something like that is a very different act than actually changing a document or altering a document. And that's Green speaking to the justices. Then liberal justices Sonia Sotomayor and Alina Kagan challenged Green's narrow view of the law, suggesting that Congress had aimed to craft an expansive statute. Sotomayor told Green they wanted to cover every base. Well, conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh asked Preligar why the other charges filed against Fisher, including assault and disorderly and disruptive conduct, were not good enough for prosecutors. So then Preligar responded, other charges don't fully capture the fact that Fisher wanted to intimidate Congress. Well, the Supreme Court on Tuesday appeared divided over whether the federal government had properly charged hundreds of alleged January 6th rioters with felony obstruction, with several justices voicing concern that prosecutors' broad interpretation of a financial crimes law could be weaponized against political protests. And of course, these days in this country, thank God, we are a little bit sensitive now toward weaponization, aren't we? So this high-stakes case brought by a former Pennsylvania police officer, Fisher, facing charges for his alleged conduct at the Capitol in 2021, could upend the convictions and sentences of more than 300 defendants and could also potentially invalidate two of the four charges against former President Trump brought by Jack Smith. And at issue in the case of Fisher versus United States is whether the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002, enacted in the wake of the Enron scandal to prevent the destruction of evidence in financial crimes, can be used against alleged participants in the events of January 6th. You know, to me, it sounds like that's a stretch. And the other side, the prosecutorial side, is trying desperately to, grab for straws to see how many different ways they can prosecute these alleged rioters. Now, Joseph Fisher was a participant in the Save America rally on January 6th. And he's facing prosecution for allegedly being part of the crowd that entered the Capitol as Congress was attempting to certify the 2020 election results. Now, the statute carries a 20-year maximum sentence, though most January 6th defendants have received far more lenient penalties in addition to being charged with other related crimes. And I think what this boils down to is the fact that by definition, what happened on January 6th of 2021 was not an insurrection. And on the left side, they can cry insurrection all they want, but that doesn't make it an insurrection. More and more, the media is starting to look like a bunch of damned adolescents. Recall the other day we told you the story about Yuri Berliner, fellow who was a whistleblower, came out very publicly to talk about how left-wing biased organization NPR does its dead-level best to snuff out other points of view. Well, he was a senior editor at National Public Radio, and let me go ahead and recap things a little bit with some help from Trending Politics. They said National Public Radio finds itself in the spotlight after a senior editor broke ranks to expose the network's government-funded bias and concerted efforts against former President Donald Trump. Now, remember, you and I do not have a choice. Some of our tax money goes to pay for NPR. They do get corporate funding, but a large portion of the funding comes out of our paychecks. And why? You know, think about this. Why are they doing this? Our government is allowing NPR to take our tax money and use it against us and our ideology. So along comes Yuri Berliner, a seasoned business editor at NPR, and he came forward with allegations that challenged the integrity of that news organization's coverage during the Trump administration. And in a very candid conversation with Barry Weiss on her podcast that we told you about the other day, she calls it the Honesty Pod, Berliner dug into his observations of NPR's transformation from a liberal-leaning entity into what he describes as a knee-jerk, activist, and scolding newsroom with a rigidly progressive agenda. Now, frankly, in my own personal opinion, I don't care what kind of editorial stance NPR takes, but don't take a leftist stance and demand that I pay for it. You know, this is criminal. Now, Berliner had been with NPR for over two decades, earned accolades such as a Peabody Award and an Edward R. Murrow Award, and he spoke of a time when NPR embodied an open-minded, curious culture, despite its liberal inclinations. But he suggested that the election of Donald Trump marked a pivotal shift. Quoting him, he said it was Trump's election. We were trying to damage his presidency, to find anything we could to harm him, and what we latched onto was Russia collusion. Pretty damning allegation, isn't it? And yet it's so self-evident. You listen to 5 minutes of NPR, and the hair on the back of your neck will stand up. So Berliner said, I think we sort of went to sort of the story kind of disappeared. Now, that's a direct quote, okay? But to me, that was like a time for like, what went wrong? Why did we miss this? Like, you know, despite our feelings about Trump, this is a story we should have sort of treated differently. And he regarded the missed opportunity for introspection and course correction following the Mueller report. That was the triggering mechanism. So he's now been suspended for 5 days without pay. So, I don't know. It's just another case of the legacy media dictating to you and me what we must think, how we must think, and how we must vote. They're no longer a check system against the system. They're clearly campaigners for left-wing politics. And they're using your money and my money to do this. Now, what's not criminal about this? I mean, they're really laying waste to the First Amendment. You and I must now engage in groupthink. Oh, I wish George Orwell were alive today because I would love to interview the man and see what he would have to say about this. So meanwhile, we have senior editor Yuri Berliner. He hasn't been fired, but he's reportedly facing consequences now after daring to publicly criticize NPR's progressive leanings. I'm going to continue to watch this. I don't know. There may not be much else to report on this, but if there is, if something does come across my desk, I'll pass it along to you. Jonathan Turley weighed in on the start of Donald Trump's first criminal trial in Manhattan Monday, and he told Fox viewers that the case brought by Alvin Bragg is legally absurd, a political hit job. Well, tell us something we didn't know, Mr. Turley. But it's fun to listen to Turley because he explains things in layman's terms. And I don't think anybody knows more about constitutional law than he does. I mean, you put Jonathan Turley and Alan Dershowitz in the same room together, and right there you have the world's foremost authorities on constitutional law. Now, Turley is a conservative legal scholar and professor at George Washington University, been an outspoken critic of bias in the judicial system against Trump across his various criminal cases. I mean, Turley has been following every single procedure. And Trump's hush money trial, he said, may be the most ridiculous of all. Quoting him, he says, everything about this case is, in my view, legally absurd. This case is basically a state misdemeanor that had run out on the statute of limitations, and Bragg was forced, after he declined for a long time, to bring this charge to do so. His predecessor rejected it. Now, who forced Bragg into this? Well, Did you hear the beginning of today's podcast? Yeah, none other than George Soros. So Turley said they took a dead misdemeanor and bootstrapped it to effectively trying a federal crime. But the federal crime here under election law was rejected by the Department of Justice. They didn't feel that this should be charged. So walking into court on Monday, Trump excoriated the justice system for its assault on our country. And that's exactly what it is. He said, this is political persecution. And it's nothing less. So he says, you have this crazy case that's going to go forward and it's going to turn on the testimony of people like Michael Cohen. And Michael Cohen just recently had a judge call him a serial perjurer. And he's going to appear as the center of this case? That's a point that Turley made. And Turley's right on the money there. So Trump's facing, just so that you know, and you probably know this, but I just want to recap it. He's facing 34 felony counts related to hush money payments made to Stormy Daniels. And we all, you know, I mean, we've heard so much about this case. I mean, she's an adult film star with whom Trump was romantically linked prior to the 2016 election. And prosecutors are alleging that Trump, through Cohen, made a six-figure payment to Daniels to quiet rumors of an extramarital affair before Election Day. Now, the crux of Bragg's case rests on whether business records were falsified to hide the source of the payment. You know, now, Judge Merchan gave the plaintiffs a setback from the start, denying them the opportunity to play Trump's infamous Access Hollywood tape or video from the E. Jean Carroll sexual assault case, both pieces of evidence they hoped to introduce to suggest Trump was attempting to shore up support among female voters by silencing the rumors about Daniels. See how thorough they are in trying to hang Trump. This is the American legal system being made a mockery of by the left. Now, Judge Merchan, whose daughter's been targeted by Trump for her Democratic campaign consulting, also denied the former president the guarantee that he was going to be able to attend the high school graduation of his youngest son, Barron, which you just heard a little earlier in the podcast here. So Jonathan Turley is following things for us, and I think if you're looking for a good, understandable recap to what's happening, I think each day, just peruse the internet, just punch in Jonathan Turley's name, and believe me, you'll catch up in real short order. To the Comedy Corner with Eric Leiden.
Cruise ships are actually a lot like this dry bar comedy, because you have to be clean. You have to be able to make people laugh without cursing and without being dirty. And I'll be honest with you, I live in New Jersey, right next to New York. I know a lot of comedians in the New York area, and they would love to play in a venue like this, but they can't, because, you know, they can't be funny without being dirty. And they'll, so they'll say things to me like, well, don't you care about your artistic freedom? And I'll say things like, no. Never really gave it much thought, to be honest with you. He said, what about freedom of speech? I said, look, I'm married. I gave that up a long time ago. By the way, my wife and I both talk a lot. It's 50-50. The problem I have with my wife when it comes to talking, my wife will cut me off when I start talking. And she'll go, I thought you were done. And I'll go, what part of, hey, you'll never believe what just happened makes it sound like I'm wrapping it up. Cruise ships are great, and aside from meeting my wife, the best thing about being an entertainer on a cruise ship is you don't really have to worry about being discovered. Well, you know, one of the nice things about working on in a comedy club on land is, you know, if the show doesn't go well, you can leave. Not out there. One of the worst shows I've ever had was one of the first cruise ships I ever worked on. And we went to Alaska. And let me preface this section by saying, I don't know how old you are, and I don't really care how old you are, and I hope you don't care how old you are, because we always focus on things that put us in bad moods, and I know that getting older is a sensitive subject. So if there's anyone here who, you know, wants to feel young again, go to Alaska. Yeah. You're going to feel like an embryo. I'm telling you. I couldn't believe how old some of the people on this ship were. I even thought the captain's last name was Reaper. I'm telling you. I couldn't tell who were passengers and who were statues here. There was an activity called Hang in There, It's Almost Over. Okay? People were going up to the front desk like, hey, can I get an upgrade? And you're like, ooh, check back in an hour. Okay, all right. Too far.
That's it. Have a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blog Guest. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.